primary sources of flavor and lore outside of the cards themselves is the literary stories that tell the tales of the multiverse. Coming in many forms throughout the years and having built a devoted Vorthos fanbase during what was considered a golden age of MTG story, Wizards of the Coast has faced backlash over the past year for its treatment of characters and the delivery of its recent lore. Can Magic's story recover from these missteps, or has lasting damage been done? Welcome to Magic the Flavouring, the Magic the Gathering podcast, where we talk about all things magic, flavour and lore. I'm Andy Mann.
Hello, I'm Nathan Cantor.
And that took me five attempts to do that intro, and I finally got there. So today we're doing something slightly different to what we've done before. Usually, or at least on our first sort of few episodes, we've been kind of churning through the building blocks of flavour in general. We did a What is Flavour episode, we've done our Colour Pie episodes, and we've done some set reviews. But this is the kind of stuff I think I've been itching to get to. And this is, we're doing a bit of a general discussion today about something that's pretty big right now in the Vorthos community.
Before we've had like actual subjects to crack through, like specific points to get through, whereas this is a bit more of an open forum, this is a chance for us to do what we do best, which is waffle and rant.
Just waffle and rant, exactly. And today the thing that we are waffling and ranting about is the Magic the Gathering story and the state of the story and where it is right now. Not even necessarily the narrative of like the what is actually happening in the storyline, but I mean that is a big part of it, but also just how Wizards of the Coast have kind of handled the storyline, like how they're actually delivering it.
The formatting has been very... It's funny. The formatting has been all over the place recently. Yeah. And we praised it in the Eldraine episode because we thought that was going to be the norm. We've had something very different to what we were expecting. And as we're going to talk about, and we're going to talk about it in the direct context of Theros. We've just done the set review, so we're going to talk about it in terms of like actual like story beats and how it's going to carry as like the wider narrative arc going forwards and what it picked up off from the last set or what it didn't, and then kind of how that affects like the way that stories might go forwards, because there's a few different things they did in this set that might work. There's a few things obviously we think didn't, but even like looking at how they've done some retcons and some fiddling to the canon of past stories, what does that mean kind of going forwards? Because clearly we're at a transitional period at the moment. We talked about this before about how Magic's becoming ever expansive. It's becoming less gatekeeped by the geekdom.
It's no longer just a specifically nerdy in a dungeon sort of pastime. It's becoming a lot more mainstream.
As much as D&D's made huge waves, obviously another Wizards product. Yeah. And there is obviously Magic tie-ins to that, which is also interesting. It is a little bit more commercialized now with Arena coming out. It's hitting wider audiences. And I guess to a point, Wizards are going to want to ensure that they're still keeping the old guard invested, but they're also going to try and keep new players invested. What kind of story beats and what kind of ways of handling story what do they need to do to try and keep the new the old players invested, but get new players invested as well?
What do they need to do, but also what huge kind of errors and missteps? I don't think it's not a secret that this we're going to end up talking about a lot of the failures, colossal failures that Wizards of the Coast have kind of fallen into in terms of the story. It is worth noting at the top of this episode, we are not here to attack any one person at Wizards of the Coast or even Hasbro, even though Hasbro as an entity is something of a problem. We're not here to necessarily talk about the quality of writing for any one author, although even though we might not like the quality or the style that one author has brought to the table, that's not to attack any one person who worked on anything. This is a much larger issue. I think it'd be remiss. There's a lot of anger going around with the story, and I think it'd be slightly remiss of us at least to pile on and just be like, "Oh, it's this person's fault. Yeah. It's that person's fault." Much bigger.
It's more disappointment, and then what are the why are we disappointed? Because Magic's such a wide trademark, it hits the beat so well sometimes, and it's the inconsistency that's interesting as to why is that happening. Obviously, there's a huge number of people that are all invested in various degrees, from I'm going to get my paycheck to I've been working on this game for 20 years. So it's hard sometimes to pick apart exactly where the failings are. Obviously, there might be some lack of communication between certain departments. There may be a lack of a change in vision as well, like the fact that we're changing into a digital format as well as from a paper format, as well as the fact that we're now changing block structure. Clearly, interpersonally within the business, there's going to be changes to departments and how different people work within different things, like vision, for example, play design team. These are all parts of the
company, narrative world building teams.
They weren't really existing before, and now they're putting a little bit more investment into it. Obviously, when those investments don't pay out, it feels a little bit more disappointing because you've invested a little bit more. And we're in a, as you said, we had a golden age of story where we're inundated with backstory and lore and things that you could get, things that you could really get behind. Whereas I think, and talking in the context of Theros, which is why it's such a good time to talk about it, there are some obvious failings.
Yeah, sure.
And I think it's quite interesting. If we pick those apart, then how does that affect the wider story? And realistically, where do we see things getting fixed? Where do we see things maybe potentially staying broken? It's going to be much more discussive.
Yeah, sure. Like,
we haven't got necessarily factual data points to go on.
As much
as us going, well, we've had an eye to this for a long time now.
Yeah.
And how does
we've been living it. We are people that are part of the Vorthos community, and I think so. For the first half of this episode is going to be Nathan's going to take us on a little journey through the Theros story, not necessarily its beat for beat narrative, but how that story was handled and mishandled throughout the Theros block, and what that kind of means for the larger context of magic. And then we're going to move on to basically the big broad scope, because we said in our Eldraine episode, in our Eldraine set review, that this idea of having this e-novel is a really good idea. Mm-hmm. This is a great thing for magic. Mm-hmm. And whilst in a bubble, that may be true or not true depending on what you think, that we were kind of looking at that within the context of its own thing, whereas I think it's much better to kind of step back now and have a look at pretty much everything from magic origins right up to today, because this is the kind of modern age of magic, and see where the problems are and where the successes are in the context of a much wider scope of information. But to get there, we need to first talk about Theros. Big thing about Theros is that we didn't have a story. No. Well, we did. No, we did. We didn't have a book or a dedicated piece of literature to go along with Theros, right?
Like a retroactive blurb.
A blurb. So, yeah, so Eldraine had, obviously, the Kate Elliott, The World of Quest e-book. There were the Greg Wiseman, War of the Spark novels, as well as the Django Wexler stories, as well as the Nikki Drayden stories.
So, as well, yeah, you also even had the lead up into Ravnica. You had, like, the single plot points. They didn't, obviously, hint, or they didn't cross any of the points from the novels. They kind of just gave individual context from the plane.
Yeah.
So I'd say like the is it investigator when she was going through the sewers, for example. Like, that was an amazing
story. Sure. But the point is that we had a huge glut of stories for Ravnica, because it was such a big story that they wanted to tell. They even used the preview season for content creators to release the cards in the order of the story going.
Exactly.
So we had a lot of stuff going on. And then we enter Theros, a fan favourite plane with a returning open-ended story arc that needed conclusion.
And it's a story plane in general of legends and myths and decent chronology.
Yeah.
No.
We got fuck all, I think is the word. So what we did get is we got a blurb, as Nathan said. It was like a 500-600 word sort of article that it was by Wizards of the Coast was at the top. It wasn't even necessarily by...
It wasn't by any particular content creator, though.
And so we had that, and then we had the lore slides, is what I've been referring to them as, which are the kind of very short 30-40 word synopses, almost like glorified flavor text.
It's almost like flavor text extensions.
Yeah, for individual cards that they thought were important. Not necessarily story spotlight cards.
No.
And then we did get...
Four story spotlight cards,
which I was thinking about this the other when we were discussing this episode. I remember story spotlights vividly in things like Amonkhet. For some reason, that's the set which I ascribe to story spotlight. I know that they had them before and after, but that had like so many storyless spotlight cards.
Exactly. They also had the little watermark, whereas they don't have the watermark.
No, it just says story spotlight.
Just says story spotlight, almost as if. It's almost like they need to make you fight to kind of get to tease you a little bit. The thing about this Theros set is that the set itself is still rich. And we said this earlier to each other that it still plays really well in isolation. The set's really fun and engaging.
Oh, the set's really fun.
It's just the context is just so wafer thin in some areas that it just feels like it was completely unnecessary to, like... I know that we're going back to a plane where we've already been there once before. You don't have to do a lot of world building, but the whole point is that if you look at Theros as Lorwyn and then Nyx as Shadowmoor, like technically they are almost two different planes. Like as much as you are in the same plane and the same circumstance, it is almost like a shadow side of it. So the fact that we didn't get that much world building, or the world building we did get was in a lot in the flavor text of the cards, because you do hear a lot about the different the five different domains that are in Nyx and how certain animals and certain creatures react when they die, and the different.
Yeah.
There is there is context of the underworld. Yeah. It just feels like the underworld doesn't have context within the story.
Yeah.
Which is very strange. Like, I had my big, one of my, because I'm going to launch straight into this, otherwise we will be here forever. So part of what I found interesting is I was looking through the set, and it was hard to sometimes tell which cards were supposed to be from the underworld and which cards were supposed to be from the mortal realm.
Yeah.
And considering that the entire storyline is based around Elspeth's escape from the underworld,
yeah,
at what point did we need to still have a foot in the mortal realm as well?
Yeah, I thought this was really strange.
It seems completely unnecessary. When you've got five different distinct realms, that is your five colours of magic already in the format. Why didn't you just do an underworld set and the end of the set was Elspeth's escape and you didn't need anything of the mortal realm?
Yeah, I did think it was odd.
Because then you could even leave out, which they did, most of the gods with bare, like a stupidly small amount of context to their characters, whether you got a little blurb in one of the slides or there's a bit of flavour text on the bottom that kind of said, yeah, they're still here.
Yeah.
And we mentioned this in our set review, like there are a lot of cards that kind of go, by the way, Karametra still exists. Otherwise we wouldn't know.
Yeah.
There's not even a card which I would think would be very necessary, but in the same way all of the main gods got an intervention card.
Yeah.
I feel like those should have been five cards of showing the other gods' lack of intervention.
Sure.
And in general, why did we need to see all this see, I say, again, we're air quoting, we do this every episode, because we didn't actually see the fight between the gods in any way, shape or form.
Mm-hmm.
Why did that need to be something that was existing purely just to create the rifts, again, I keep air quoting, I don't know why I do this, the rifts that that were created in the underworld that allowed a lot of these creatures to escape using the escape mechanic,
yeah,
were through the conflict of the gods. But without that, there wasn't any context given as to why,
sure,
why their conflict was causing that beyond Erebos was distracted.
Yeah.
So he wasn't paying attention.
So I think, yeah, a big issue, which I know we've spoken about before, is that they keep changing the set structure. So in sort of times bygone, most of the blocks, as they were called, were three different sets. Mm. That took about maybe a third of a year, half a year, to tell the story of an entire plane. So the last Theros set, for example, was broken down into three sets, and that was the Theros block. And that allows that time taken, whilst if you don't like the story, that means you have to stay there for a long time, doesn't mean that you do get to tell a much larger narrative, right? Mm-hmm. You're not compressed at all.
Yeah.
Whereas putting it down to one set or two sets even means that you have to be super tight with the story that you're telling.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've tried to do here is they've tried to tell the story of the warring gods and to try and conclude Elspeth's storyline in one set.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas really what they should have done is picked one or the other and preferably just gone, this is Elspeth's set of her trying to get the fuck out of the underworld.
And then we can then come back a few years down the line and find out that, oh, this is what happened with the gods because you didn't see them last time. Let's go back and focus on them again.
Yeah, sure.
Instead of trying to do a little bit of everything. And I guess the other issue as well is that across a three set block, mechanically, everything gets quite diluted. Theros is one of the biggest examples of this, and the fact they tried to put all the constellation in Journey into Nyx and ended up being a little too late because people by that point were bored of the whole enchantment thing anyway. So even though they packed all of the enchantment matters into the last set to give it a revitalization, it didn't necessarily actually work because people by that point were already a little bit burnt out. The good thing about having a three set block is that you get an extension on story.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if the mechanics are a little bit waffly because you actually get everything from learning Crufix's perspective on other planes and other big bads like Nicol Bolas and the Phyrexians and that kind of thing. And you also get the set and the stories, like single stories of Kiora beating Thassa. And there are so many, like if you go through the story blurb and you read through it, there are so many points you can kind of tell that they went, okay, we need to give at least, I don't want to say for the idiots that they thought this, but they said, well, just so someone wants to see the whole story in one place, let's at least just write down a little bit of what happened.
So no, I think the point you're trying to make is that they, for people that maybe don't have the initiative to go and find story elsewhere, they want to try and put it all in one place and try and fit it in. But, and that is fine. That's fairly commendable because, as you say, there are lots of storylines where when we used to have online Magic Story, the articles pop up on the mothership. Sometimes they would just go through a season where they do like one-off stories.
Mm.
And if you weren't necessarily invested in the story beyond what was happening literally on the cards, you might not go looking for it.
Mm.
So that's not a bad thing. But what it does lead to is them trying to cram so much into such a small space that it just doesn't work.
Yeah, they have these throwaway lines of saying that, okay, so this happened. And you just have to accept that this happened without too much context as to why, or any kind of background as to the meaning of or ramifications or anything like that. So it kind of makes it feel, the whole story kind of feels a little bit tacked on because you don't have you don't get payoffs.
Yeah.
There's no expectation payoff.
Yeah.
Because there's no expectation in the first place. They can't just give you all the payoffs in throwaway lines and you just kind of have to accept and build some little headcanon. And the good thing about headcanon is it's personal. The bad thing about headcanon is that no one can, you can't really rely on it. And then by the time you next come back to the set, everything might be completely different because sure. they didn't give you justified context. I mean,
it's funny you mentioned about headcanon. There has been a lot of fan fiction come out around this Theros blog. Mm. Like, there's been a real uptick.
I'm shocked.
People are like, yeah, oh, can you imagine that? If wizards won't give us the story, maybe we have to do it ourselves.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of makes it sound like we should always be doing fan fiction. But
I mean, I think there are people out there that will cause. I mean, don't.
I mean, yeah, there are people that do that. Yeah, you're right.
I spent a good few years writing some headcanon fan fiction for Zendikar, and. It does build, it allows, especially if you spend a lot of time like paying attention to the story, you can kind of predict where it's going to go. Like, my greatest hearken to this day is the fact that I called out Azor being involved in the Ixalan thing, like, ages and ages before. Like,
yeah, you were annoyingly on point about that.
Yeah, because I paid enough attention to all the little bits and pieces, and to me it seemed really obvious, almost as obvious as the red herrings of the Eldrazi coming back in Innistrad. Because they had the We Come as Three clues, clue in the bottom of the clue tokens.
Yeah, on the clue tokens, they had like a hidden message.
Unbelievably clever. The problem being that it was really obvious anyway, so it wasn't like...
Obvious to you.
Well, it's like, I think everyone knew it was going to be Eldrazi as soon as the first tentacle
appeared. Oh, right,
so
yeah.
But you know what I mean?
But they left these little breadcrumbs in the story for you to find, mm-hmm. so you could actually go and do it. Whereas with this Theros story, no.
Yeah, there were so many little statements of... Say, let's look at specific points in the story where it says things like, after a brief encounter with Daxos, Elspeth planeswalks away. That is the culmination of the payoff of her and Daxos's arc.
Is that on the lore slide?
That's the opening line to the little paragraph which talks about Kallax, which we will talk about in a little bit as well. And the fact that You try to pay some amount of credit to the old character of Daxos, where the last time we see him, he's returned after the tragedy of the original block. Now he's back as a demigod, which also has very little context as to how apart from Helior did it, there isn't really any context as to how he did it. And then after all that, and he goes, obviously he needs to go and strike all of the other gods' presence out of Miletus, which, weirdly enough, has no effect to Aphara, who is like the goddess of the polis.
Yeah.
Like, it's anyway, it's very easy to pick up when they've handled nuanced characters and nuanced interactions so well in the past. It's really frustrating when there's no nuance at all because it feels very flat. And it doesn't feel necessarily like they don't care. It just feels like they necessarily didn't have enough time or resource to put into making it deliver in the way that we wanted, especially when you are looking after characters like Elspeth and you're looking after characters like Ajani. Like, Ajani's meddling at the end of the last block, how he was trying to sow discord against the gods.
Yeah, sure.
That has no gravity. What would have been great is if we hadn't seen the mortal realm, for this block, we'd seen only the underworld, and then when we come back to Theros, it's been, say, 10-15 years of everyone undermining the gods' power, and then you come back and everything's in disarray, and then there are Titans. We haven't even got onto the Titans yet, Andy.
No.
I mean, I'd understand that, okay, this show might to a degree show that there's actually a lot of story going on. No, it just shows there's a lot of things that are supposed to be going on, but we just kind of have to accept and nod along. Like, there are Titans running around. And we don't actually really know how many of them there are, exactly how powerful they are.
Yeah.
We don't really understand exactly what happened back in the day beyond some vague thing of, oh, they used to rule the world. And, like, one thing I wanted to look into, and this is, like, the end of my first little bit of rant, so basically, the story's really shallow. And it's annoying because when you've got used to diving in, even if it's diving into something that's a bit porridgey because you don't necessarily like it, it takes a bit of wading through. That's my food analogy for the day, is wading through porridge sometimes to get through some of these through some of the recent novels, because it might not be handled in quite the way that you want it. You know, the Goldilocks Three Bears, some people want it just right and not all porridge is made equal. Analogy went off the rails a little bit.
Yeah, that sounded more like you were talking about Eldraine, but sure, go on.
But no, this is talking about War of the Spark. That was all about those stories, because they are the way that those were handled. They had a lot of content in them, and the few things that people picked up about that they didn't necessarily like, you can at least delve into and have a discussion about, whether it's like Mowu or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
But the fact that there's such a shallow amount of story in Theros, it's a lot easier to get annoyed about, because you can't find a justification one way or another, because there isn't really an answer to the question.
Yeah, sure.
So one of the things I was looking at was, if you look at, say, Titan of Death's Hunger and Titan of Nature's Wrath.
So this is Kroxor
and Uro. Yeah, if we're looking at the Titans, if they existed primordially before the gods did, and this is a world of belief becoming tangible.
Yeah,
I guess the whole point is that these were natural, like, iterations of processes that have to happen in the world. Death's hunger is a thing.
Yeah.
Nature's wrath is a thing.
These are things that are happening in front of people, so obviously they're going to believe in them, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like, so if we're talking about like what spawned them, I guess these maybe are just natural processes that had to be given form, like a physical entity form, because otherwise they weren't able to function effectively. So I was thinking, like, okay, clearly there aren't any two. In The Binding of the Titans, one of the sagas, you can clearly see there's more than one. More than just the two that we see in the set. So what other ones what other ones could there likely be? And if you look at the card Fateful End, this is one of the cards that they even spotlight on one of the
slides.
Saying about how those who attempt to defy fate soon learn of the god of destiny has a wrathful side. Her fury is swift and final. Those who defy her find themselves wound to the strings of fate. Now that's basically superfluous waffle. Fate destiny.
It doesn't mean anything.
Really doesn't mean anything. Yeah. But the whole point is, if you look at the card, it shows that there was at least another titan, and because this is considerably bigger than like all the monsters that are on Theros.
Yeah,
I might be wrong.
The thing that she's facing on the card art certainly seems more like a force of nature
considerably bigger than she is, and she's a fucking god.
She's a god, yeah.
So clearly by size context, I think that is another titan. It looked like to be a bestial one. Mm-hmm. And the way I'm looking at it is maybe it's representative of savagery and that kind of thing. So I wouldn't mind seeing these core primal concepts as titans. And that would have been an interesting dichotomy between the gods who are losing their mortal favour against the titans that have natural affinity to processes on Earth. And that's, I mean, who's to say that the gods, who's to say that the Titans weren't correct? In the same way that the Eldrazi and Ugin got very up in arms about don't mess with a process and a system that you don't actually understand.
Yeah, sure.
In the same way, maybe the Titans were similar. There's the reason why catastrophic environmental disasters happen to a point. Like, floods nurture growth, like volcanic eruptions nurture growth. And then maybe these were processes that needed to naturally happen. And obviously the gods over the top have kind of formed this pantheon because the mortals needed them. This is all stuff that's be really interesting if we could delve into it, but we can't, because all it's got is there are titans, they escaped, and that's it.
Yeah.
And moving forwards, going when we go back to Theros, I'm not sure if they might have spoiled this a little bit now with the way that they've done this and kind of thrown everything up in the air and just gone, well, we'll catch a couple of the things.
Yeah, sure.
And then we'll leave the rest to settle down and we'll see what we can come back to later. I think that's great. Leave open threads open in Magic. It's fantastic. Apart from, don't just make your Elder Dragon's blind and stuck in a meditation realm so they can come back later, typically, which he will definitely do.
Yeah.
So obvious. Anyway, but leave open threads, fair enough, because you do need stuff to come back to. And essentially, this set did feel like it was just Elspeth comes back, the set.
Yeah.
They needed a way to pull her back, because she's probably going to have some amazing context going forwards, whether it's interacting with the Phyrexians, since Ashiok obviously bounced off and got super invested in them. Or it's going to be that she takes the place of Gideon in the Gatewatch and having that kind of that righteous warrior trope. And then maybe Gideon, because of his devotees, can then take Heliod's place coming forward. I mean, these are all very interesting things that could happen. But this is just me musing random headcanon arcs.
It just kind of felt like they were trying to tell so many different stories in one go. It seemed like they were trying to do world building in this set as well, where they didn't necessarily need to.
Mm.
Like, would it have been so terrible to have confined this entire set to the Underworld and just had all of the different story arcs be literally about Elspeth trying to escape the Underworld? It wouldn't have. It would have been fine, because that's what people were invested in.
Yeah.
There is something to be said for not just doing fan service. Like, you don't just want to do what people want to see, but to at least try and do a majority of that would be quite nice.
Yeah.
There's nothing to say that there couldn't have been, and look, we're not writers, we're not in charge of Magic story. There might be a myriad of reasons why they can't do the storylines we want, but there would have been nothing to say that the storyline couldn't have been something more like Clothis is guarding the Titans down in the Underworld. Elspeth needs Clothis' help to escape the Underworld.
Mm-hmm.
Clothis helps her, releases the Titans break through up and out of the Underworld and defeat Erebos, and Elspeth, on the back of that, rides them up into the Mortal Realm and is able to planeswalk away. Mm-hmm. You can still have your Titans, you can still have your other gods, you can still have the monocolor gods warring with each other over the situation, but they all seem to be different storylines that they tried to kind of little tie together that really weren't there. And maybe it was a headache of them coming off the back of something big like War of the Spark, where they did have a bunch of story threads that only needed to kind of merge together.
Maybe enough that you were all weaving together already.
Yeah, great. Maybe there was a bit of a thing of where they were trying to go, well, people want a lot of story.
Yeah.
They're not interested. Or maybe Eldraine, because Eldraine was a very self-contained story. Mm. They wanted to do something again that was bigger.
That had some pertinence from previous. But then if they were doing that, then why didn't they pick up any of the threads from the previous set.
Yeah, as you say, they dropped Ajani, yeah.
Like, Ashiok, yes, is in the Underworld because last time we saw him was in the Underworld, but then in between that, for some reason, he was also more of the Spark, seemingly in the meditation realm.
They. Ashiok is a they.
Ashiok was in the meditation realm. Why is Ashiok in the meditation realm, or depicted in the kind of the meditation realm, when they had no interaction with Ugin?
Yeah.
Why are they in War of the Spark at all when they have zero interaction with anyone else anyway?
Yeah, that was interesting enough, yeah.
And then you just put them back in the Underworld again anyway to interact with Elspeth, because that works for the context of giving Elspeth a weapon, and then also to have the link to the Phyrexians as well.
Yeah.
I thought you can't planeswalk from the Underworld. How are they back in there? How do they off again?
Sure. Is it that they can't planeswalk away from the Underworld?
Why would Elspeth be able to planeswalk away?
Because is it maybe if she's not technically alive, like how in maybe it's the way that you die in Theros?
But then why could Ajani and Kiora just and everyone else, why couldn't they just automatically planeswalk to the Underworld instead of having to travel through to the Underworld?
Oh God, I'm sure there's a reason, but it's not been presented.
This is the thing, because Theros is super interesting. The metaphysics of the plane is super interesting, but you don't really get enough. You don't get enough justification from
them. Don't.
And especially now that you're turning all of these tropes that we had originally. Theros as a set was beautiful. It was very well set.
To play,
everyone liked it. And everyone understood it quite well.
Now you're taking original
these,
Theros.
Yeah, and now you're taking these conventions and you're flipping them. But you're flipping them without actually really kind of properly justifying how they can be flipped, why they were flipped, or what you're going to do with the flip later. Before I go on to why I've got a very good theory as to why it's happened, one thing that I think we really did lack in this, because we have so many different perspectives, is we had no point of view story articles.
No.
And these would have been fantastic. One of the best things about Dovin, that you could understand him as a person, because you've got to see from his point of view how he takes in information, how he processes it, how he reacts to things. And it gives the character an actual character.
Yeah, sure. Like, no one thought that Dovin Barn, which is the planeswalker from Kaladesh that was on Bolas' side during the War of the Spark, no one actually really thought of him as being outwardly evil.
No.
He was just because they could see where he was coming from.
He was just
wrong in what he was doing.
Yeah.
But no one ever thought, well, he's just a malicious arsehole.
Yeah.
It's like, well, no, he has his reasons. His reasons are just coming from going towards an odd place, right?
Yeah. It's like betting on a football team and you bet on the better team to win, even though the team's playing your team. You're not going to bet on your team to win because you know your team's going to lose. And you should, as a supporter, bet on your team to lose. But you know that you should bet on the other team to win because they're going to. It's that kind of thing. And because you didn't get any point of view, like a point of view story from Kallax would have been amazing to ground exactly why and how he's made up, like how he, because it even says like one of the nicest, don't get me wrong, the blurb does have a couple of lines in it that open up possibilities of story. One of them being that each time Kallax, whenever he battled Elspeth, because he basically chases Elspeth through the Underworld, he's created by Clothis as one of the agents of Destiny to basically lock her keep her in the Underworld to keep her locked to her fate. And at each battle that he has with her, she bests him. But as he grows and learns himself, as well as learning her, he does better and better each time. That process of learning yourself as a creation, then coming to that conclusion at the end of, I cannot serve my function because my quarry has literally done a thing that I can't do away from
me. Yeah, literally planeswalked away.
And then I would have loved to have seen that paragraph where that thought process went from, well, I can't follow her, to, oh, I've got a spark. Bye, guys.
Yeah.
And then how that would, obviously you'd have to justify some amount of what is he as an existence? Is he a human? Is he a construct? Does he have a, this is the thing, does he have a
does
soul?
Does he have a spark?
Does he have, how could he
how
have a spark
How can a construct
a
have a spark?
Yeah.
And do angels have sparks? Angels don't have sparks.
No.
He's essentially
point,
an angel.
Yeah, the whole point is if he's a construction of man or however, I mean, maybe Clothis has a very specific way of doing things. But again, we'd say maybes to a lot of these things because we don't know, because we don't have the context. Now, I've got a good reason to why. And if you listen to Mario's latest Drive to Work, the one where he's talking about Theros set design, he mostly talks about from a mechanical point of view, about what different mechanics they kept from the last set and which ones they dropped, which ones they moved into this one.
Yeah.
We didn't really talk about this from a story point of view, because a lot of it doesn't necessarily matter. Like, Heroic was dumbed down to only cards have the word heroic in the card name, having a triggered ability of it, because this isn't the Heroes set anymore.
But I kind of think that, flavorfully, that was quite nice.
It worked. It's a nice hint. It pays back to the old block without distracting from the new one. But what he said is that originally Eldraine was going to be both archery and baseball. These are the
production names.
Yeah, the names of the sets before they actually settle on what they're going to call them.
Yeah.
And instead of doing two Eldraine sets, they made Eldraine into one set, and then they basically fabricated a Theros set to make up the second one. Now, not only when I thinking in that about that in context of the Eldraine set, it did feel very, very rich, and there were a lot of things that we said didn't get time in the sun, and maybe that's because they had to condense two sets worth of story into one. So you don't get your beginning and end; you have to have a beginning and an end all in one, which I think is fine for a set when you're world building anyway, because it saturates it to the point of it being super dense. And as much as maybe the flavor on the cards wasn't as dense as Theros, because they had it mostly and only on the cards in Theros, so it's harder to compare. Theros, to me, clearly was, at some point in the production line, not supposed to be happening. It happened far enough back that they were able to, you know, make an entire setup.
Yeah, sure.
But because they didn't have as much time to, say, employ someone to do a novel, or get six to eight different people to write story articles,
yeah,
and everything else had to feel very... like, if you look at the story, it feels superfluous, because I think, legitimately, it just was. And when they realised they wanted to go back to Theros, what do we want to go back to? Okay, we want to hit Constellation. Okay, we're not going to do Monstrous, because we kind of already did that with the Civic thing. I'm kind of parroting a lot of what he said when he's talking about the mechanics. But if you think about that in the context of the story, the main thing they go back to is Elspeth.
Yeah.
And the four story spotlight cards are all basically Elspeth. Her agonising torment of dreaming about Daxos. Her going her triumphant surge going through the underworld, beating things. Being chased by...
Kallax.
Being chased by Kallax. In a relentless pursuit, and then the culmination, which is Helios gets beaten, and then there's Helios' punishment. One, why is Helios' punishment only a 4-turn thing? Does that mean he's going to get out in the future?
Oh, well, yeah, of course he will.
It says in the blurb it's going to be for eternity.
Well, like, or at least until people stop believing in him.
Well, yeah, but then at that point, the enchantment falls off, and the creatures, it's also after 4 turns, the creatures then exiled. That's what I mean. Anyway, that's a very specific
that's a mechanical flavor point. That's a bit of a fail, yeah.
So why wasn't Rise to Glory one of the spotlighted cards? Because I think the whole point of this set was that they wanted to focus on Elspeth escaping the underworld, and they did what they could to fluff the rest of the story out around it. The annoying thing is that they did some really interesting things, but because they fluffed it instead of actually building it up from a foundation and up, again, this is all theorizing, but based on what he said and how... It makes a lot of sense to me that they came up with all these cool ideas as to what they could do.
Yeah.
But because it was kind of done a little, maybe not last minute, or later in the production line than they normally would have, they had these story arcs that they could pick up on, but they didn't actually pick up on them, like the Ajani and the Dak and the Ashiok.
It does seem very odd talking about story threads that are kind of going into Theros. Even things like them killing off Dak in the War of the Spark trailer and book, not even in the set itself.
Why did it need to be in War of the Spark?
Yeah.
Why couldn't they have just kept Dak in the underworld because he was in the underworld, and then he dies in the underworld, and that gives more gravity
probably
to this
story?
Probably
he was already locked in to die before they thought they were going to do Theros.
Exactly. And this is the thing. It's all these little hints, like the whole Azor thing that I did a few years ago. When you find all these little points individually and you kind of mesh it all together, again, I'm not going to have to write to Wizards and get a confirmation of this.
Well, no.
But it does feel a little bit like that. And the only issue with that is that I imagine, as we said at the beginning, a lot of this might come down to how they're rearranging the block structure and how, from a business point of view, they're trying to reimagine their product into something that's more easily engaging and more like, it's much easier to sell a big splashy block every three or four months and go, hey, we're back. So you know that story that you weren't paying attention to for the last 6 months? Well, here's the end of it. I get that that's not necessarily how they want to do, and maybe their feedback has shown that doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose maybe in this era where they're bringing in a lot of new players through, say, Magic Arena or whatever else, doing return sets, especially because it's been 7 years since we had the original Theros set, maybe doing return sets is something that they're maybe not too invested in, especially or at least pre-War of the Spark. Like, they brought... Maybe because of Magic Arena and this kind of new influx of players, they go, right, Throne of Eldraine is now our starting point.
Yeah.
Anything before that, we're going to have to... I mean, we'll still do, because
they seem
they're
reluctant. They seem reluctant to do things like go back to Kamigawa or go back to Lorwyn. They'd rather redo Eldraine than go back and reimagine Lorwyn. I think it's easier for them to leave the products that people liked alone rather than bastardise them and ruin them, which they could potentially do.
And have done.
Than just to go, okay, let's reimagine that kind of concept into something else. And I think it's just a shame... And the biggest reason why it's a shame, and I think that they chose poorly for purely the fact that Theros had a lot of people that were invested. It is a set that had a lot of investment already in it, and it was quite rich. And to kind of almost feel like it almost felt like a rushed appendix.
Yeah.
And that's the issue that I have with it, because you don't have a lot of answers to questions, and a lot of it felt like either it was put there to further future plot points, like Ashiok, because... what they're going to do in the future is going to be super interesting with the Phyrexians, but it felt like half of the set was just to go, by the way, Ashiok's interested in the Phyrexians.
Yeah.
And, or things like, okay, again, like, we need to fluff up this side of the conflict, so let's give all of the gods a demigod, even though none of them really have any justification.
Sure. Well, again, it was a world-building thing which was nice flavour, but in the terms of the story, if we're focusing on magic story, had no bearing.
Yeah, they built a really nice house, but they didn't furnish it.
Exactly.
So yeah, this is, and it's little things like why Timurek calls the dead is a card. Why is it weaker flavor wise than the rest of them? Because I think it is because the story has no context.
Yeah.
Even the first Rowan games or the Acroan War, they have context even within themselves as cards.
That's why sagas are so good.
The sagas in general should have that kind of, like, both Elspeth Conquer's death and Elspeth's nightmare shows her when she's in the underworld and how she gets to the point of meeting Ashiok and then what happens after meeting Ashiok going forwards.
Yeah.
And that kind of shows. Essentially, that was what the blurb was those two cards written out. And it's that's why I think it's more difficult. Because I mean, the only thing is I'm just kind of ranting, like, not mindlessly.
It's just...
Because I'm bouncing from point to point.
All of your points are very valid. And I just think it's just a shame that there was just such a weird sort of waveline, if you like, of whether they were trying to hit flavor points and then trying to do things mechanically.
Yeah.
They were trying to appeal to new players of world building, but they were trying to tie up a fan favorite plane. And it just seems like maybe a two set block would have been just fine.
Exactly.
They would have done maybe first block would have been world building, second block tie off Elspeth's story.
Show us the underworld and then show us what happens when they breach and the Titans come out. Basically, do Rise of the Eldrazi in two sets instead of doing three.
Yeah.
And then I guess the whole point again is that they probably just had to find some way to deliver. They had a hole. I don't know why they didn't decide to do Eldraine across too, because that could have worked and you could have gone back to Theros later. There are probably reasons why we need to tie some of these characters back in.
Yeah.
And this might be where you start to see Wizards have a bit of an issue in the fact that they've left so much open and they can only tie so much up. They could only tie so much up with War of the Spark. They've still got all of this leftover stuff that they can't do with. Oh. Now, that is absurd. If you think about it in terms of number of characters and everything, Magic is extensive.
Yeah.
God, it's wide. We've got all these people that are still alive with their own arcs and their own intentions and all these things. What's Tezzeret going off and doing now? Like, there are so many different people you can ask questions about. Like, off the back of War of the Spark, there were still three separate stories of three different people chasing three different people.
Yeah.
And that's not including any of the nonsense that's happened in this little Theros block. So I can kind of understand that maybe if they had to fabricate, again, somewhere a little bit later down the line than they used to, this whole set, and they used one of their previous products to kind of to build on, then that's fine. But it felt like, one, they didn't necessarily build on what was already there. It felt like what they started to build already was quite weak, and it felt like the things that they've left to go forwards aren't obvious enough to... I mean, again, we had no conclusion to the Titans or to Clothis or anything like that whatsoever. So I'm glad that we at least should come back and we should go back to the gods. But why they have things like all of the interventions, when interventions feel benevolent rather than destructive, baffles me.
Yeah.
Like, the gods war and battle felt to have zero impact and relevance, because that's not happening where we are, because we're in the underworld.
Yeah.
And it's that disjointedness that I feel like is weird. Normally you'd say having a block or a set that has eight different story articles and they'll have slightly different tones, that might feel more disjointed because you've got multiple authors. But at least the world itself is being built up and rich, and you can, in your mind, then weave those stories together.
Sure.
This, it kind of feels like they kind of threw a lot of things together and just hope that we, as a community, would kind of go, okay, cool, never mind.
Even when they had different authors, and actually this will tie in quite nicely to the sort of next little section of this podcast, even when they had different authors, they were on the same team. They were on the same narrative team, and they spoke to each other directly. And I think there's two things that are very telling for me from, like, a practical standpoint of how they're delivering this story, or the lack of it, with Theros. Is that, one, as we said before, all of these articles that have the lore slides, that have the blurb, and have anything to do with story for Theros, none of them have an author at the top. It's all by Wizards of the Coast and their generic logo. And the second one is, if you go to the MGD story section, you can find, for where they would usually have, if they did a story for Theros, the Theros stories ready to go. They have instead Theros God's End by Jenna Helland, which was the 7-year-old ebooks, which on one hand you could go, they're giving a shout out to the old Theros story for new people to come in and see, which is great, cool. On the other hand, you could see they put it there because they didn't have anything better.
Yeah. And it's all it's going to do is build you up. If you go back and read that, it's going to build you up to expect some nice conclusions to things, and you're not really necessarily going to get them.
No.
So it's, I guess it's a matter of how do we feel like. Obviously, they know this isn't how we... again, we always say that Wizards gets feedback very... takes our feedback very well. Not ours personally. We have a personal line.
Within the context of designing a game 3 years in advance, they tend to actually react quite quickly.
Yeah, and they've shored up and turned around and said, don't worry, this isn't how we're going to be handling the story in Ikoria.
Yeah.
So I feel like, as much as they tried really well, hard to, the more that... Especially like someone like a pair of people like you and I, the more that we delve into it, the more it's pretty obvious that they did a very good... They did a very good job of building a set very quickly out of nothing. But for us that like the story and the lore and the Vorthosian side of it, it's a lot easier to see the cracks.
Yeah.
And that's only because it's a very pretty picture that they're painted, which makes the cracks in it a little bit easier to see.
Sure. Okay, well, I mean, that's Theros. I think the problems with Theros are very plain to see because we're living it right now. I would suggest you read a lot of the fan fiction. Some of it is pretty good.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people that curate these websites with the fan fiction, people like Carrie Thomas, are very sort of reverent of the Theros lore. We've said all we can say about Theros.
I really like the story of Theros. I just think that it needed to have a bit more depth.
Yeah, well, at least we got Elspeth back.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. In whatever fashion that happened.
Like, there's nothing that happened in the set that I think... None of the story beats that happened that I disagree with beyond the Calyx thing. But that's just... like with the Mowi thing, if you don't get reasoning to your breaks in your lore, which you've already established, then it's going to frustrate
people. Well, see, okay, on a slight tangent, though, I disagree. I don't think Calyx is anything like Mowu, because with Mowu, so in War of the Spark, Ravnica, there was a line said by Zhang Yanggu, the Planeswalker, when it was asked, oh, how can you planeswalk this dog around with you? And he says he's a stone dog, which was very airy-fairy. What does that mean?
Yeah.
But at least within the context of Chinese folklore, you can kind of go, well, there must be some sort of explanation. We'll get to that soon.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, cool. There was zero explanation as to why Calyx could...
It was even like the collar and the charm that...
share a charm.
Yeah, things like that you can pick at. I mean, the fact that they had to leave so many of these, they clearly just didn't have enough time to even try to give a little pretend context to things. Is, and that, I keep saying the word, but the whole point of Theros is it was very beautiful, very pretty, and these amazing ideas, but it just needs a little bit more context.
Sure. Well, talking about context, we're going to move into the state of the story en masse now. This is quite a downer podcast. Like, there's a lot of whinging to be done.
Yeah.
But I think it's true. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to do it as quickly as possible. I'm going to run down the timeline. At least I've created this timeline. I'm sure there's stuff I've missed. If I've missed anything, please let us know via Twitter.
You're a perfect human being, Andrew.
I try to be. I've gone back and I've listed down all of the story releases from 2015 to right up to now. And I think it's worth looking at it as a larger context of story, because if we look at things in a bubble, we tend to either praise things correctly or maybe dismiss things incorrectly. I think that it's much healthier to look at things as a whole. So I'm just going to bin through it. So I'm starting with Magic Origins in 2015, because I kind of feel like that's where the modern era of storytelling kind of happened.
Yeah, that was where they kind of consolidated and said, hey, we're going to write an arc.
Yeah, this is what we're going to do. So 2015 to February 2018, we had the first glut. I kind of done 3 years in exactly one point. That's clever by me. So we had Origins, Zendikar, Innistrad, Kaladesh, Amonkhet, which all followed the same idea of having the narrative team do... one story arc, but between several writers.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had Ixalan, which was the set that was written entirely by Alison Lurs.
Mm.
All of these different sets had sort of varying degrees of feedback in terms of whether they were good or not. Mostly all of them had individual stories that became fan favourites.
Yeah.
And if you've been keeping up with us on Twitter, we've been highlighting some of those fan favourites as well. Ixalan especially had a lot of praise for the furthering of Jason Vraska's story.
Yeah.
That was all down to Alison Lurs, which is great. 2018, March to May, we then go to Dominaria. Dominaria is worth highlighting because it was the first set that had a contracted third-party writer in the form of Martha Wells.
Yeah.
She came in and, I mean, everyone liked Dominaria.
Yeah,
it was well-received.
There was a lot of hype about that, the fact that they were getting an external, I don't want to say established writer, because obviously everyone else that works for Wizards in
No, but a third-party writer that does it as a primary job.
Someone who you can go and read their other books from other fictions.
Yeah, exactly. So this was really well-received, and it seemed like actually that even though it was sad to have the narrative team not doing it collectively, or even having Alison Lurs do it, having a third party writer might not be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, it was cohesive.
Then we go on to 2018, June to August. We get Corset 19 with Kate Elliott. Again, third party contracted writer. Everyone loved the Kate Elliott stories. Mm. This was the first break from the Gatewatch story arc as well, because we knew that we were leading into War of the Spark sort of relatively soon. So to have a break from the Gatewatch, but to still look at Bolas'...
I think the whole point is we needed to give, for people that didn't know anything about the 20 years of Bolas' storyline, he is actually really important, he is super powerful, here's it in a little kind of short concept.
And it was interesting as well, because the way that she formatted it was a... flashback of sorts within a past time period.
Yeah.
Because you were looking at the ancient past of Tarkir and those characters having flashbacks
of millennia
before
that.
Ago.
Yeah.
So, that's just worth noting, because we're going to get into how they do their stories, whether it's linear or non-linear storytelling. And you can do non-linear storytelling. Mm-hmm. You just have to do it with Kate Elliott on board, it seems. So the Kate Elliott stories were fantastic. Then we move into August, September of 2018, where you get Vivian Unbowed mm-hmm. with Cassandra Cahn. Three-part story focusing on Vivian Reed. A little bit odd because it's still not the Gatewatch.
Yeah, it was the nice thing about that was being able to see Torizon.
Yeah, so we get to see Torizon, which is on the plain of Ixalan, even though Ixalan is the continent.
Yeah.
But we're calling it Ixalan. So it's nice to have like kind of a recent callback to the Ixalan
stories. I think the whole point is they wanted to show Vivian, who was going to start to take over as the green, the main green planeswalker.
Sure, or at least, I mean, you know, we know she's going to be in Ikoria, but that I think her arc's going to be a lot broader. Then we go on to 2018, October to February 2019. Now, here we go. This is it. We've got Nikki Drayden coming in to do the Ravnica storylines for Guilds of Ravnica and Ravnica Allegiance. It's time to fight Bolas, correct?
See.
No, because what we do instead is we have Nikki Drayden, who is fabulous. Nikki Drayden's writing is really cool, doing essentially what is two sets worth of slice of life stories.
Yeah.
They do five apiece, for mm-hmm. one for each of the guilds across the two sets, and they're just, oh, we're going to follow this Rakdos bar owner. Yeah. Oh, we're going to follow this Dimir
agent.
It's
like Stories of the Citadel from Rick and Morty, really. Yeah. So it showed like, it has nothing to do with the main
characters.
Nothing to do
with the main characters.
But hey, if you want to know how Ravnica's doing...
Which is really surreal, because they were great, but they just seemed like you could have done those stories anyway. We don't even know, within the time period of those stories, where they're set.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, we haven't written down here, but this is the same kind of time that they released the guidebook for the D&D expansion.
Yes,
well.
It is, because, well, I think, yeah, well, that might
which
be something to do with it.
Which has a lot to do with it, yeah.
So, yeah, the Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica, which also contained a lot of lore stuff. Sure, okay, well, that's completely ruined my
No, but that's fine. What I mean is, it's funny, because, obviously, for most people, because they won't necessarily play D&D, that would be why it feels weird. But obviously, they maybe wanted to go, well, this is a perfect example. Since we're going to be doing novels alongside it, it's a perfect time for us to give some... Because if someone's picked up the book and they go, well, where can I read any Ravnica stories? And they go, well, actually, all you can read about is this Nick Arbonis character. They forgot, hey, there's these 10 slice of
life. I mean, that's fair enough. But I mean, and that is a good idea. But if you look at it, again, on a broader spectrum, February 2019 was when those stories finished. We haven't spoken about the Gatewatch in those stories since May 2018. Mm. So it's been almost a year.
Yeah, there was a hole.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, and the thing is, also, I guess there was a Gatewatch fatigue as well. Everyone was really pissed off.
Sure, but it's building up to the big storyline.
And also the point is that they did things like, no one cared that we were talking about Jace when he was becoming a pirate. That was great.
Yeah.
Like, no one actually really minded about that.
Yeah, when you had interesting Gatewatch stories.
Yeah.
I mean,
was it just flailing my my Cyril around?
So the Amonkhet story is really the last time we saw them as a Gatewatch. Because in Dominaria, they're broken.
Well, yeah,
because
they got beaten up by
They got beaten up by Bolas. So within the middle of this Nikki Drayden run on Ravnica, in 2018, December, we got Children of the Nameless by Brandon Sanderson.
Oh, yeah, good. Juicy.
Now, this is a big point to make. So Brandon Sanderson, we've been having these third-party writers come in, and I think I will be corrected if I'm wrong, I'm sure, but I think all of these third-party writers didn't have an initial love or connection to Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, they weren't necessarily players of the
Brandon game. Sanderson, who is a big-time fantasy writer, is in love with Magic the Gathering.
He's made his own
He's got a power
like
9. Yeah. He's got a framed power 9.
He's invested in the story.
So he did Children of the Nameless. Again, this is a complete break from the current storyline because it was focusing on Davriel Kane in Innistrad, who was a new Planeswalker character, and it was released as a free ebook through the WotC website. No money, a full novel on the WotC website. That's worth noting. In December 2018, again as well, we got Chandra number one through IDW Comics, written by Vita Ayala. I'm not going to talk too much about the Chandra comics because they were just dogged by late releases.
Yeah, and then they've petered out now.
They've petered out. Well, they were going to do a run of her on Alara, and they've stopped doing them. Yeah. So they did the Tybalt storyline with her, and then they've stopped. Mm. It's worth noting here, however, because this is December 2018. The next point is going to be March 2019. So we're still a few months away from the War of the Sparks stories being picked up. But the Chandra webcomic is set after the events of War of the Spark.
Yeah.
So 3 or 4 months before we get to War of the Spark, we already know Chandra doesn't fucking die.
Yeah. Yeah, we're worried about sometimes like the cards spoiling the story because we didn't get the story articles until after the sets have been released.
Yeah.
No, instead we're just gonna tell you basically who's
survived. There's other characters. Yeah. You've got Tybalt, you've got Ajani.
Yeah, we already know that all these people are going to be fine. Yeah, so we know there's not gonna be like a global catastrophe.
So that was a big point to make. Back into 2019, we've got March 2019, War of the Spark spoiler season season starts for the cards. Again, before the book is released. So we're getting the spoilers. This time they're actually created by WotC quite tightly, mm-hmm. and they're giving out these cards to content creators to spoil in sequence yeah. so that the story on the cards tells the story.
Yeah, we didn't actually get too many leaks. There are some sets back in the day where we've got the entire set leaked. And obviously yeah, completely
and this was a really good move because it not only did it bring content creators in, but it also meant it was a big showing that maybe WotC really did care about the story enough to even curate a whole season of spoiler cards
yeah,
around it.
That's and what it's a huge undertaking. Fantastic.
Yeah. yeah, and like they had respect for their content creators because they were, you know, holding the obviously the content creators had to not release their cards, but the fact that they got cards to release, it yeah, great. I think that was brilliant.
Hype.
It is still before the book comes out. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in the story, you're starting to see cards being spoiled. Yeah. Like
if you wanted to wait for the set to release so you don't get any spoilers.
Is that Gideon riding on the back of a demon that looks suspiciously like Rakdos in this card art?
Yeah.
Oh, so he doesn't kill Bolas with the Black Blade.
Yeah.
What do you mean this is Niv-Mizzet reborn?
Yeah.
How
yeah.
did he die?
Yeah,
he
died?
You don't even have the
he
stories.
Died.
You don't
this,
even
it's
have
like
the book
all over
yet.
Again.
So this is it. Right, so 2019, April, finally, we get War of the Spark Ravnica by Greg Wiseman, released through Delray, a 304-page hardback book, which you could buy physically or as an ebook.
Mm.
Worth noting because it's not free, and it's not through Wizards of the Coast, it's through Delray. So we actually had to purchase a copy of it.
Which might also explain why it was delayed a little as well, because I think...
Maybe.
I think it literally is what the reason. I think that as a company, for some reason, it wasn't tied in. So what's, sure. I think it was frustration as well, because WotC basically wanted it to happen in a certain time frame, and because they weren't the company that were handling it from the
well,
ground
Well, so
up.
Yeah, so, well, okay, yeah. so it was a shit show then.
Yeah,
okay, that's
basically.
Fine. It was a shit show. also, the quality of the writing is debatably bad, I think, is how people kind of thought.
Yeah, it was it handled in a way that that we as a fan base wanted it to
no,
be handled?
No, is the answer, quite honestly. And again, it's not necessarily because Greg Weisman is objectively a bad writer, but he was a writer that didn't seem to have any ties to Magic the Gathering and wasn't given enough. I mean, what an impossible task.
Yeah.
He has to finish off... like
a 20-year arc with 30 odd characters
across two books no more than 300 pages.
Is he a bad writer? No. Was it bad writing? Yeah. Because you can't do justice to things that you don't
exactly. And also he crowbarred a bunch of new characters in. Anyway, this is another topic which we'll get to. So there we are. We have War of the Spark. We finally get our story. However, it's a story which has lots of things happening. This is where we talked about non-linear storytelling. We don't see how Niv-Mizzet died.
No, this is halfway through the story of the block.
This is the second and third acts of the story. The first act is completely
When we've already had two sets of the block which haven't had storyline to
which
it yet because we haven't had because they have the slice of life parts of it.
Yeah.
So we've had the two sets of Ravnica with slice of lives and with actual storyline that's going on. But instead of getting any of that storyline, no, we're going to give you the book of the third set when the third set comes out.
So then we move on to May and June of 2019. We get War Stories, again by Greg Wiseman. This is on the WotC website and is free. It's just like the regular stories that you used to do. But this isn't even necessarily new content. What this is parallel chapters or collected chapters for the events in the book but told primarily through the storyline of Rat, who, not for nothing, the Rat as a character, dog shit. I hated
Rat. Do you like her?
I hated
Rat. She did
Rat.
Feel like a story... she felt like...
Her characterization, everything about... She's got her own following.
Yeah.
I'm not going to bemoan people who do like her, because I understand. Yeah. And as a character, just as a singularity, fine.
Mm.
Putting that character in the War of the Spark, I absolutely hate it.
Yeah, we didn't need yet another interesting, quirky character, and we have enough people to
be
focusing.
Got a bunch of planeswalkers running around.
I guess that was the port of the story, was through her eyes, because she was seeing everything from a new perspective. So you had all these new, weird, powerful, strange people.
Sure. Whatever. So this is how the general public, I guess, or the non-Vorthos public got their... the general public, as if we're better than them. This is how the non sort of like hardcore Vorthos got their War Spark stories, because they got it through the WotC website.
And it was a little bit of the chapter, and then it was expanded on with new content. So annoyingly, if you wanted this new content, you still had to reread parts of
the
book.
You had to basically
reread
the
book
again.
And you probably didn't really like the book anyway, so you had to reread bits that you didn't like with
awful,
extra...
terrible. 2019, June to October, we get The Gathering Storm by Django Wrexler. Again, released through Delray, but this time... instead of it being like a free thing on the WotC website, you had to sign up to a Del Rey online newsletter.
Wait, sorry, Andy, is this yet another format of storytelling?
This is another one. So this isn't the comic or the book or the free online or a third-party book that was released free on the website. This was a newsletter that you got through a publisher.
Yeah,
and
you got it emailed to chapters one by one to you periodically.
Now, this is the first act, which we wanted to see. This had a lot of stuff like how Niv-Mizzet got killed.
And arguably is some of the best writing for the entire
really
block.
Good. Yeah,
the writing
Django
is very good.
Did really well. Yeah. So, but this was released after two lots already of the War of the Spark.
Yeah, we've already got the conclusion twice. Now here's how it started.
That's not non-linear storytelling. That's, oh shit, we fucked
that's
up
backwards. That's what happens when you go, hey, can we give... it's like with the Star Wars franchise. Let's give a trilogy to three different directors and they can write them independently.
Yeah.
Why didn't that work?
Yeah, exactly.
Shock.
I mean, there are rumours flying around, and I will caveat this. These are rumours. There's nothing supporting this.
Yeah, we don't have concrete
evidence.
Django
Rexha stories were meant to be where the Nicky Drayden stories were.
Yeah.
And it was meant to follow a linear path.
Yeah.
But then, as you say, maybe because it was the D&D
different
book,
companies were handling it differently and they couldn't get their timing proper. Again, we talked about this with the Theros thing. Transition period.
Yeah.
We are in a transition period.
Just didn't seem to work. Then we move on to, now we're now in September of 2019, we have The Wielded Quest by Kate Elliott. So this is the first paid ebook novella, is how they're describing it. And this is what seemingly they were going to be doing, one ebook per format. It wasn't the 18 bloody quid that we spent on the book for War of the Spark. This was about £3 is what we spent on it, and it was an ebook which was downloadable from the WotC website. So it was kind of them splitting the difference. And I, for me personally, and I know not everyone feels this, but I kind of feel like a lot of people do as well, this was a nice splitting the difference, because they got in a third party writer, which people liked, and to pay this writer, they expected you to pay for the story, but not an exorbitant amount, a reasonable amount. And it could happen once every four or five
months. Alienate people, but it still kept there to be it still required an amount of investment, you know?
Yeah.
So it was fine.
So the story was fine. I would say it was definitely an above average, magic story.
Kate Elliott can't do wrong.
I mean, there is, as we spoke about in the Eldraine breakdown, there were issues between the coherence of the set and the book.
Yeah,
but
they did feel somewhat disjointed. But again, that's another way of how is the story being delivered alongside the set.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's just another way of it working.
Yeah,
again,
this is where we came in and said, if this is how they're doing it,
we are very happy with this.
This is fine, and this is not going to be... It's different to the online stories. Mm. Sad that the narrative team don't get a look in, but this is good.
And I think maybe the only reason why it did feel a bit disjointed again was coming back to that idea that it was supposed to be two sets, and they had to condense it into one, so maybe it didn't follow the plot points directly.
Yeah. So there we go. Right, now this is where shit hits the fan. For reals. 2019 November, War of the Spark Forsaken is released. Written by Greg Wiseman. This is the second half to his war story. So War of the Spark, Ravnica is the first book.
Yeah.
Forsaken's the second
one.
And
it's like basically this is the epilogue of what happened after
the
War of the Spark settled down.
This is where things get really icky. And this is where we're going to try and not, you know, hurl shit at people, but this is where the real controversies start to hit. So firstly, the writing is just not great. People just don't like the way that people are characterized.
Yeah.
The colloquialism is not great.
Yeah, their voices don't seem to be correct.
No.
Like the way, the direction they're speaking from. This, again, as we say about people that are investing in the story, and I've said this in a couple of Reddit rants, because obviously I want to do these things, that it's really hard to build backstory and make people care about characters that you don't care about yourself when you have to fabricate these voices and these story arcs. The good thing about these individual, okay, you had eight different people doing an article across a story block, was that each of them already had investment in the game.
Yeah.
They already knew in their head what the character sounded like.
And they could talk to each other.
And even if they did sound a little bit different, they could at least agree on a certain canon.
Sure.
Now, this is someone who has to make up a headcanon in their head, make themselves care about it, and then present it to people who have been caring about it for much longer, much more, and make it believable.
Sure.
That is almost impossible.
So Greg Wiseman already had an impossible task, and it, like, we'll get to this. So the big controversies in the book, the minor ones are things like, and this was also in War of the Spark, Ravnica, the culmination of the Sorin Nahiri storyline.
Oh, God,
I forgot
about that bit.
Mishandled.
The
wrapping up of the Chainveil storyline is in that book.
Oh, God, again. You're opening a can of anger. I forgot about all these things.
So the Chainveil, Liliana's big thing.
And then we had the Vraska and Jace
romance get
essentially stoned to death, hey? But yeah, that's gone.
And then the big one, which was the handling of Chandra Nalaar and Nyssa Ravine.
Which was decidedly not handled well.
So as opposed to us trying to like make flippant jokes about it, but I will read the passage.
Go, please, thank you.
Because then at least we just know what we're talking about. So the passage in question is this. Chandra had never been into girls. Her crushes, as she had had a fair share, were mostly brawny, brackets, and decidedly male, close brackets, types like Gids. But there had always been something about Nyssa Ravine specifically, something the two of them shared in that great chemical mix, arcing between them like one of Raoul Zurich's lightning bolts. That had thrilled her from the moment they first met. Now everything is different. It was over before it had a chance to begin. Maybe they'd missed their moment. Now, the language used to describe this... I mean, so, right, I'm a cisgendered, straight male. I'm not going to speak for you. So I
no
can't,
one speaks for me.
I can't articulate the damage this language has done more than has already been done by people who it literally directly affects because of their gender and because of their sexuality. The idea, the words used that are causing the most contention is that the decidedly male part and the fact that the word thrilled was used as if it was some kind of flippant throwaway.
It's almost like it was like
crush.
A phase. Yeah.
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 So this is the big thing. So this this Chandra and Nyssa storyline has been built up for years.
So much shipping.
No, God, no, start, it's not been explicitly stated.
You could start up a trade route to China on the shipping that this
it was never
has.
Directly explicitly stated, but that was never the issue. It was
no,
fine
it
that
was
an
illusion.
Because it was going to culminate. And it did. Because they did, in the War of the Spark Ravnica novel, they did get together
they
in
have
a way.
They have moments where you can clearly tell what they're trying to hint at. The insinuation is that they have built up an affection to each other.
Yeah.
Nyssa grounds Chandra and Chandra allows Nyssa to open up. It is a perfect marriage of two different characters that were given, arguably, two very flat personalities and then complement each other in a way that was not only really, really nice, but it played so much into the current climate of acceptance, especially in an industry and in a social environment where it's mostly just a bunch of straight guys that are just geeking out with each other.
It's been a long road to have diversity. Yeah. And there are writers that used to work for Wizards of the Coast, especially if you look at characters like Alesha from Tarkir, who have different takes on gender and sexuality and identity and all what that means. And it's been a long, hard-fought road for some very marginalised people in, as you say, an environment which can be quite toxic sometimes. Mm. And within one paragraph, in such a flippant way, it's just been discarded.
Yeah.
So this is a big contention.
And then is it a matter of, was it a personal decision? Which it clearly wasn't. Or obviously, was there pressure from somewhere to do
well, now,
this?
Here we go. So, 2019 November is when War of the Spark Forsaken was released. On the 22nd of November, so this is after the book has dropped.
But within the same month.
Within the same month. And this is, because all shit hit the fan, there was a What's the Apology article for the treatment of Nyssa and Chandra, and I'm just going to bring it up here on my phone just so I'm not misquoting anything. So this article was released 22nd of November, and the rundown of it basically is that they understood that there was issues that people had. They understood that people had problems with the way the relationship was portrayed. But the line that really bugged me was in the second paragraph of this article, and it's still there, you can go see it, is referring to Chandra. She is still the character you've come to know and see yourself, your friends, your family in over the past decade. So she's still the character you thought she is, except we didn't write it.
Yeah, so
way.
What they said is that we've stated, for whatever intents and purposes, that she's not in any way, shape or form that she's purely heterosexual.
Yeah.
But if your headcanon wants to allow for that, it's like, well, it was going to allow for that anyway.
Yeah.
It had already done so.
What harm
don't turn
doing?
Around and go, okay, so we're going to rewrite her, but if you want to continue to... Basically, it felt like almost like they knew that they'd... I don't know what point the ownership of the person writing it, what their opinion specifically is, of whether they're having to tone down their own annoyance at it, or if it's someone who is on the agreement side of trying to scupper it out and they're having to fabricate an apology.
Yeah,
I'm not
sure
which way it is.
No, well,
either way, you can tell that it's hollow, because you can tell they've basically gone, yeah, we know there's not much we can do about it, kind of sorry, but not so sorry that it looks like we're actually apologising.
Exactly.
For
and
it.
So immediately this apology came out. People kind of saw it as a bit of a whiff anyway, but then blame was starting to go towards Greg Wiseman.
To the writer, of course.
So that was on the 22nd of November. On the 25th of November, 3 days later, Greg Weissman issued an apology on the blog website S8, where he, and I'm bringing it up here, I felt that it should culminate in War of the Spark books. This is referring to the relationship between Nyssa and Chandra. In lieu of bringing them together, as it was not a relationship that Watsy planned to pursue, my goal was to write something that honoured Chandra's feelings towards Nyssa and Nyssa's feelings towards Chandra, something that would give closure to their relationship in a sad but satisfying and understandable way. I believe that if readers had seen my original idea for the chapters in question, they might have gotten a better sense of what I was trying to accomplish. Now,
so that's a very clear statement of there were rewrites.
There were rewrites that I was not in control of.
And the thing that's interesting as well is that you could say that when you read that line back, the line where it talks about the being decidedly male, it feels weirdly disjointed from the rest of the writing. Now, don't get me wrong. If the rest of the book had been perfectly written, it would have stood out a little bit more. Now, there were other mishandlings of Ajani laughed his cat laugh and things like that. Yeah, geez. Oh my God. There are so many lines that made me kind of just want to burn the book. But it outside of the context of the rest of the book had been great, you'd have heard that. You can still kind of read in that you can feel that there is almost a flatness.
Yeah.
To I mean, as someone who's written and you're someone who's written as well, and you can almost feel love in writing sometimes. You can feel there's a bubble.
It's why people like writing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's got some life to it. And you could feel there was a flatness to this. Yeah. And it very much felt like someone's moved him aside, went over his typewriter. Well, not typewriter. God, what year are we in?
You might use a typewriter.
But for the intents and purposes of pressing backspace, anyway, goes in, deletes that little paragraph, and then rewrites it and goes, yeah, that'll do. There's an amazing episode of South Park where China's basically forcing Cartman to write exactly what they want, and every time he says a word differently wrong, they go, in the background. And linking into this, obviously, there is an aspect of global interaction. And as they said in this, you're talking about how with the direction that she's moving going forwards, Chandra is going to be in a series going forwards.
Yeah.
The thing is, they could have, instead of... I guess the threat for them is that anyone who gets really invested in this episode, in this series, then looks at the backstory and goes, she had a gay phase? Oh my God, that's terrible. Now, I can't imagine people that are watching a Magic the Gathering series aren't going to be offended, but one of their characters maybe had a slight gay, I don't even say gay phase, but at some point had an interaction and could just be open. You don't have to state that she is decidedly interested in males.
Well, yeah.
You can just say that she's not interested in Nyssa anymore. You could have made it Nyssa's problem. Nyssa wasn't actually able to fully open up and all of the... everything.
It didn't have to have anything to do.
It could have just petered out. Yeah. You didn't have to rewrite the entire arc.
Peters out as relationships do.
It just felt so... especially in this day and age where everyone's trying so hard to handle appropriateness, but also not overhandle appropriateness to the point of where it seems pedantic or condescending.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, the rumour is, and this is another big rumour,
we
do have a confirmed Netflix series coming up, which... should be like a shining golden example of where the story is going to be like, wow, they really care about the story.
Yeah.
So we have this Netflix series that's going to be starring Chandra, and I think they said Jace is going to be a protagonist
I'll be shocked if he isn't.
Sure. And the rumours are that the Chinese market and the Chinese audiences will not respond well to a character that proactively identifies as being not straight.
Yeah.
And so they wanted to retcon it. They wanted to make it maybe seem less than it was.
Yeah.
Now, the reason this is a rumor is because when the hell are Watsy ever going to admit to that? The reason that maybe it's just, they're just not doing themselves any favors is that the apology, which I just read from in their 22nd of November article, was not made available in China.
Of course it wasn't. So that underpins this idea. And it's almost like, you know, as a company, it's almost like, how much do we value the money that we're getting to be able to keep making this game for our audience compared to giving our audience the game they deserve?
Sure.
And obviously, as a company, there are so many people that are just going to be, they barely care about they don't even care about actually that it's a card game. They just care about they'd probably break down the different sets into numbers. You know, they're almost like when you take the flavour out of the cards and you become a sprite because you don't necessarily care about the context of the card, whether it's a fairy or a goblin or whatever. They don't care about any of that. All they care about is how much did it take to make?
Mm.
Where are we outsourcing it from? What are the margins?
I think we should be very clear. When we say they as Wizards of the Coast, what we also mean is Wizards of the Coast and their parent company.
Absolutely,
Hasbro.
Absolutely their parent company.
So it's Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast.
Because
my gut feeling tells me that Wizards of the Coast from the top down probably cares a lot.
Yeah.
But it's Hasbro.
Their hands will be tied by the people that tell them what they... And obviously, it won't do the game any justice for them to all leave up sticks and leave at the same time and go, well, good luck finding someone that will do the job you want, because then we'll just end up with a much worse game.
Sure.
And then these people that really love their jobs and love working on this game won't be able to do it anymore.
Yeah.
So it must be deeply frustrating from their point of view, because obviously they're the ones that will see what the potential is. Obviously we see potential as well, but we see potential because we spend, you know, every two and a half months between sets obsessing over where it's going to go and how it's going to be.
Sure.
Whereas obviously they're actually handling these products years in advance. So they can probably see their babies nurture from ideas, blossom, and then get trimmed down into, you know, some of them might want a nice wild bush instead of that horrible cut straight edge cubic thing, you know, that they come along and go, that, sure, that doesn't match with the rest of the neighborhood, you know. So yeah, anyway, we got stuck on that because that was one of the
that was the big thing. And really, just to round off the little timeline of releases, you got 2019 December, that's when Theros Beyond Death Lore Slides released. Mm-hmm. January is when we got the story blurb article.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the 27th of January, there is an article entitled Odds and Ends on the WotC website,
yeah,
where Mark Rosa answers in very short, succinct ways, at least compared to how we speak about things, answers a bunch of questions. One of the questions is, what is the state of the story for Ikoria moving forwards? And he quotes Jeremy Jarvis, who is, I think, what's his title? He's narrative director. Mm. It's something similar to that. Mm. And then Jeremy Jarvis says a lot of what we've just said, where they were trying out different story delivery formats.
Yeah.
They were trying out different ways of doing it. And they pinpointed that the ebook, published paid ebook, a la World of Quest, is probably the best way to move forward.
It was the one that will be doing it. Backlash.
Yeah, they will be doing it for Ikoria and the foreseeable future, which, fine.
Yeah.
So this is it. So we haven't got much time left, but I think it's worth saying that the reason that we've tried to look at this in a big bubble is because there is so much good stuff that's gone on, even in the past year, let alone in the past 5 years, going back to 2015. The storyline has gone through a golden age. And there's I see a lot of anger on Twitter, a lot of hurt online from content creators or just people who enjoy the Magic story. And even players, pro players, or people who have no investment in the storyline because they understand that this has been going
on. And it trickles down, you can feel it.
You can feel that there's a lot of anger and hurt.
And the community is obviously very vocal.
Sure.
Shock. As we should be. That's why we made a podcast.
Exactly. So the big question is that, does all of the good stuff and all of the stories that worked and all of the ways that it worked and the Django Rexha stories and Nikki Drayden and Kate Elliott and all these characters and resolutions that did do well, like their individual characters, like I liked Teo, people liked Rat, even though I think is awful. All these little nuggets of gold and the way that, like, we forget the trailers they're doing for the sets.
Oh my god, fantastic. The trailers are also very, again... Spoiling and maybe undercutting with how you can tell that Dak dies in the trailer.
Sure.
It's because if you look at this, at the story, at the timeline as you've written it, 2015 to 2018 is one line. You've done like seven different bullet points for 2019. Yeah. They tried a lot of things last year.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Lots of different formats. One, I understand it's really difficult for them because they're trying all these different things that might not gel together, so the delivery might not be exactly... Like, coming from a theatre background, we know that sometimes what you want to get on stage sometimes just doesn't happen.
Yeah, sure.
And even on the night when you've rehearsed it forever, it still falls flat a little bit. They're clearly trying a lot of different things and they're trying to get a lot of feedback. But the problem is that at the moment is that they're now getting into a stage where their audience is so wide they're having to go back and trim the little bits back to try and streamline it whilst also trying to create a format that allows it to be delivered effectively.
Yeah.
Now those two things together, when you look at, say, in the context of a set like Theros, where you can tell it was a little bit ham-fisted, it will impact negatively on players like us that want to get invested and pick apart the lore, because it means even the simple fact of if they keep doing this and trimming, it gives us less to talk about. If we have an ebook every, like, say 3 months, like if we'd been doing this podcast for the last year, we'd have had so many episodes talking about all these different formats, all these different things. If you take away those going forwards, not only do we have less context for our game, which is part of why we're invested in the game anyway, but it gives us less to discuss and less to talk about in general. And the fact they do these little retcons, they go, we could continue this Jason Vraska story and continue making that, but it's easier for them to go build up and then let it all go and then try and culminate hundreds of different, not hundreds, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but try and culminate like a dozen different story threads into one set. It almost feels like they were trying to rush everything that they've done story-wise so far to conform it to something to move forwards in a nice easy method. But then you've got Phyrexians coming up, which have already got a load of lore. Yes, okay, we started on a new plane, so you're not going to have all the Yawgmoth history. Dominaria, again, as much as they did try to tie up all of the... It was a touchback in an old plane, and they basically finished off the Chainveil story.
Yeah.
It does feel like they're trying to tick off all these boxes to try and culminate all these different things that they've had in the past. Cut the bits like the bisexuality nature of Chandra. Cut the bits that are going to be more difficult to explore going forwards to make a streamlined product.
Yeah.
The problem with that is that if you don't deliver it in an effective way, which trying six different methods in 1 year isn't going to do, it's going to alienate...
Out of sequence as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're going to alienate these people that you are trying to invest more, and it's going to give you more reason to cut it out. A weird personal story. I was at uni with, and I had two tutors that were kind of at odds with each other. One of them did a very specific style, and the other one did a very different specific style. Now, I had them both for the first year, and then because people didn't like one of the styles, they stopped turning up to the class. The university thought that the attendance reflected that the teaching was bad, so they cut that side out of it.
Yeah, sure.
In reality, the people were just being lazy. And I lost the half of that course that I really enjoyed because perceived data showed that it wasn't enjoyed as much. Now, if you would reflect that into this and you have all of these stories and everyone's going, actually, no, this is shit. Eventually, Watson's going to go like, fine, then let's just not bother with any story then.
Which is we'll what give people you a, thought they did with Theros.
We'll give you a TV series. We might give you a webcomic every now and again. But screw it then. We're not going to invest all this time into people that either don't have time because now we're making three planes a year. All of these writers that were doing all these articles probably are tied up world building because they're having to make two new sets every year.
Yeah.
World building is really bloody difficult. Or you're going to get to a point of where you don't have anything to show for them anyway, and you're having to do everything through the cards, and you lose that side of it, that side of your audience that really want to delve into your storylines. And part of things like doing a Guild Masters Guide, things like that are really, really encouraging because it shows they're expanding it a little bit more. But if they're expanding it, what are they diluting?
Well, and also, what power are they giving up to powers that maybe aren't as invested in the storyline?
Yeah.
So I guess a year is a long time. This has all happened within 12, 13 months. And it's true that they may have lost huge chunks of the Vorthos community. But then this is the question. Is the damage that they've done, or is the damage that they are doing to certain members of this community, as in the people who like the storyline, and then communities within the community who are basically washing their hands of Magic Story, and therefore, for a lot of them, the game at large, is that going to be fixed over the course of a year?
Yeah.
Is it everlasting?
Yeah.
For some people, they're like, I'm done with Magic. That's it.
Yeah.
And they're justified in saying that. I'm not done with Magic. I'm not even done with Magic Story.
No.
I'm optimistic because I want to be optimistic.
So am I. I see things like Children of the Nameless. I'm like, if you can do stories like that, please look at back. I mean, I guess that it's difficult to find the feedback of it, but I don't imagine we're going to go back and see a Davriel Kane character. One, he's too nuanced to think delivered to the average game player. Little things like the way he'll interact with his demons, and in general, I just don't think that that's the kind of story that they'll like to push.
No, but
the world soul,
the idea
of the entity that he has inside him, that is as a Vorthosian in terms of wanting to see that in story arc. That's what the kind of thing I want to see.
There have been good things in individual stories, so hopefully they'll learn their lesson and they'll do
that. We just need to fuse that into the mainstream and make sure the mainstream doesn't stay too mainstream. Because realistically, the reason why we like this game is because it wasn't mainstream.
Yeah, I don't know how much that factors into it though, because yes, the more mainstream it is, the more streamlined they have to make it. But what my point is are they going to, what parts of their own community, like Wizard of the Coast community and Hasbro as their overlords, what parts of the community are they going to respond to? We keep saying that they are very good at responding to criticism.
Mm.
Over the next year, so this time next year, if we do a state of the storyline, where's it going to be?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's very murky. I'm looking forward to the Okoria published ebook, and I really hope it does well
so that
they keep doing it. As you say, that they don't look at the numbers and go, oh, well, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because that is what it needs to be doing.
And we don't have any real idea of how they're going to handle it going forwards. And it's really worrying because there have been so many things that are very, very decidedly poorly handled.
Yeah.
It's not very, that's much less encouraging than the bits that are handled well are encouraging, because there's always been good bits about Magic that have been handled well. The bits that are bad, every now and again, you'll have a bad novel. Like, I'm pretty sure that people didn't like the novel that was about Tezzeret in the original Lara block. That didn't stop the story from continuing. If there are so many different things across different formats that get negative feedback or are perceived to have negative exposure, then they will just stop doing them, because they are a business and they know that they can, at least from a Pro Tour point of view, or a competitive play point of view, still make money off of the cards. And this might seem to them to be superfluous. The fact that they now have on the token card, instead of it being a token on one side and advert on the other, it's just the same advert on both sides.
Sure. But the thing is that I think the problem with that way of thinking of sort of going, oh, well, if it's not doing well, they're just going to cut it and people need to sort of show support for it, is that people who aren't showing support in it are very justified in not showing support. Yeah. You can't tell someone who looks at the Chandra Nissa situation and goes, well, to me, that affects me in such a way that I am actually hurt by this and this treatment.
Yeah.
Why would I invest myself in the card game?
The way the company's handled the characters.
Just everything about it. Like, why should I then invest my time and money into the card game?
If this is how you're going to present yourself as a company. Yeah.
I really hope that people come back to Wizard of the Coast, and that Wizard of the Coast primarily, I hope, give them a reason to do so.
Yeah, like Ikoria will be really interesting. I think they also need to move away from trying to focus on inclusivity on specific characters, because they can get themselves into hot water and have to do these kinds of things and reverse it. The fact that you had the lesbian couple of werewolf hunters in Innistrad, the fact they were able to leave that in isolation gives representation without it crossing into...
Sure, so yeah, what you're saying is they should stop making such a huge song and dance about going, look at how inclusive we're being.
Yeah.
Because as soon as they stop doing that, or as soon as they mishandle it colossally, it comes back to bite them.
Or if they should just focus on it, and then it has to be, if it is for that reason, having someone up and above going, actually, we don't want that as a representation.
Yeah, sure. There are plenty of writers and plenty of Wizards staff and plenty of people in the community that could probably give Wizards a very good sort of lesson in how to just tell their stories with care and instead of trying to crowbar things in for the sake of them trying to boost sales essentially.
If you care about your product, we will care about it with you as well. If you're just again, it'll be interesting to see what happens moving forwards. There has been a lot of ups and a lot of downs recently, and it hasn't made it any less interesting. It's just there's been a couple of very severe disappointments. And I know Magic Story across the years has always had these pockmarks of disappointment, whether it's, as I say, a specific arc or in general just delivery of the storyline. But it would be, I think it's just, you can see that they're trying a lot of things. There's a lot they're struggling with, and there are a lot of things that they are getting wrong. The only good thing about that thing is if they keep trying, eventually they will get it right.
Yeah. I guess it'll just be how many people are going to lose in the process.
Exactly.
I don't want to end on a bum note. I will say I am looking forward to Ikoria.
Yeah,
I know you are
it looks
as well.
Really good. Interesting.
I will also say, Wizards, if you're listening out there, if you do these paid published ebooks, you don't necessarily then need to always get third party writers.
Mm-hmm.
Give Alison Lurs a book.
Yeah. Her off of
Ken Trooper book.
Yeah, just take a break off of building four sets a year, and then maybe she'll have enough time to do so.
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys, that's been our State of the Story episode. Like us on Twitter. Please like us. Just like us, please.
I like you, Andy.
Come follow us on Twitter at MTFlavoring. I'm at Andy Manface.
At The Fox in the Moon.
Yeah, we're going to be doing this thing, guys. We're going to be talking about planes in a future episode upcoming. We're going to be talking about which planes we want to see. Mm. And we're going to be going off a lot of it off the planes cards, is the commander product.
I picked up 75 out of however many they are. I don't know off the top of my head, because I know it's missing a few of the powerful ones, but I picked up the planes chase product, so we've already interacted with a lot of these planes naturally anyway.
So which planes do you want to see actually become into the story, because we already got prototype Theros and prototype Tarkir out of
what ones out of those plane chase do you think they'll adapt into actual sets?
Yeah, exactly. Let us know on Twitter at MTFlavoring, because that's where we're going to be coalescing a lot of our data, and then we'll talk about it. You can also email us mtflavoring@gmail.com. And guys, generally share this podcast around your friends. Get a non-voth of Orthos to be a Vorthos.
Yeah.
So there's
get
more
them as angry as we get. Yeah. Oh, we didn't mention Nagas this episode. Boom, got it in at the end. Lovely.
If there are more Vorthos in the world, then we can take over, and then it will all just be story.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be a story. It'll be a story which has an answer.
We don't even play
product.
The game anymore. we cut the flavor text part of the card off. Oh my god, even saying that it hurt.
Oh no. Right, well, we'll stop it then. Right. Guys, thank you very much for listening to Magic the Flavoring. We'll see you next time.
That was my line.